safe and warm in the Wellington studio as we head towards the shortest day, and it seems to be dark all the time. We welcome Pacific correspondent, RNZ Pacific's team leader, Moira Toileipa Taylor. A talofa lava, and welcome, Moira.
Talofa lava, whakalofa lahi atu.
Now, in Fiji, it's not good what's happening at the moment. Things not tracking well with COVID cases, and is there a bit of a debate over whether a lockdown is needed?
Yes, so the latest update was that 91 cases were announced overnight. That is yesterday, so that was last night. In the last 14 hours, they've had 91 cases. Yesterday, there were 121 cases, and the day before that, there were 114 cases. When they announced the 121 cases, the concerns too was that there were two new clusters and two new locations, which they were really, really worried about. So the health authorities felt that because of the new clusters, likelihood of there being other transmissions going on in the community was really, really likely. So, and one of the cases was in one of the new clusters was in a hotel in Suva, housing medical staff from the main hospital in Suva and also the team who are part of the COVID response team in Fiji. So, yeah.
Goodness, that's not good. But has there still been political resistance to a lockdown? We're still not talking about a lockdown?
No, and there has been. It's a catch-22, really. So there have been some settlements in the main capital, Suva, who fear a lockdown. Their worry is, obviously, a lot of the people who live there, they rely on taking their stuff to the markets to be able to sell it. A lockdown would stop them from doing that. And also, a lot of them have said that food is really, really short in some places. We had a story where one family were just surviving basically on a packet of biscuits. So there was also a launch appeal by Save the NZ here in Aotearoa, who were trying to launch an appeal to raise funds for food, because that's the biggest issue at the moment in Fiji. So yesterday, the Foreign Affairs Minister had tweeted that some PPE gear were going to Fiji Health, and also $200,000 towards food and relief in the country.
Goodness, it's really, really worrying times.
Yeah, and I guess that's it. People have been calling, the opposition have been calling for the government to do a lockdown. A lot of the NGOs, you know, they have, strong NGOs in Fiji also calling for a lockdown, but the Prime Minister just says would not work. It's too it would just devastate the economy.
Now, it's been a remarkable time with the Polynesian Panthers marking 50 years of activism. It's been a remarkable time, hasn't it, with the apology over the Dawn raids being announced. But we're looking at a movement with a long and rich history here in New Zealand.
Yeah, 50 years this year. Incredible. And appropriate time, obviously, with the apology this week too. And there's just been so much stuff. The Panthers are still really gaining a lot of momentum in terms of the work they have done over the past few years. They've done tours and schools throughout New Zealand, so that's been really awesome as well. And there's a young Pacifica movement coming out of that as well, just, you know, for people to not be complacent, to, you know, to call things up when they actually see things that aren't going right. And I saw too that when the apology was made, just like so many people had come out sharing their own stories. Obviously, the Minister of Pacific Peoples, Aupito William Seal, shared his own story as well. So it was just amazing to see. I felt almost that people felt good and comfortable that, you know, that the apology was almost an acknowledgement that it had happened. And people thought, yeah, now I feel really good about telling my story. And it was just, I saw social media was just flooded with Pacifica people talking about it. It was amazing.
But the pride of what the Panthers stand for as well. We had a wonderful interview, I think it might have been last year actually, with Dr. Melanie Anai, and there was a BWB books out on the legacy of the Polynesian Panthers. And just listening to her and to the courage and the vision and the spirit of the people who founded this movement, but it's sort of having a renaissance at the moment as well, isn't it? There's a real pride around it.
It's been so lovely. And For the new generation, you know, so a lot of the Pacifica who grew up in the 70s, you know, in the 80s, around that time when all that stuff was happening, the thing is that they were aware of what was going on with the movement and the people. But, you know, it's this next generation who are now discovering it, which has been incredible, because they're kind of like, I didn't know this was going on in Aotearoa. This is a shock to them. So that has been awesome to see too. And there's a young kind of generation, and maybe taking up the mantle of the Black, you know, Panthers, Polynesian Panthers, but almost in a way that also taking it on different ways, like the climate issues. That's a big concern for young Pacifica as well. Employment. So they're kind of taking that spirit
and evolving it.
Yes, and it's really, really beautiful to see.
There's Untold Pacific History also on RNZ's podcast page, which is very interesting because, again, that's talking in part to the children affected by what happened in the 70s. But, yeah, it's certainly a great deal of focus at the moment, 50 years. Now, in American Samoa, the United States courts overturned a citizenship decision. Could you tell us a bit more about this case and its significance?
So this is huge. So what happened was that it's kind of divided. So American Samoa is a US territory, but they are not American citizens. So there is a slight division within the territory and American Samoans. Some people really want it to be that they can become US citizens. But then there's people who are opposed to it, because if American Samoa does become, I heard someone say, Americanization, their concern is that also what it would do, it would disconnect their cultural side, which is obviously their Samoa practices, land, the Matai system as well. So that's the big fear. So basically, three American Samoans in Utah went to a court and argued that because they were born in American Samoa, they therefore should be American citizens, US citizens. So the courts ruled in their favour. This obviously caused a big dilemma in the territory itself. So the State Department, the US State Department, American Samoa's congresswoman in the US, as well as the American Samoan government, went back and appealed it. It took over nine months for the court in Denver, the appeals court in Denver, to decide that no, that it really shouldn't be a court that decides the outcome of citizenship for America, for American Samoans. It should be a constitutional issue to address that. So, but American Samoa's congresswoman, Aumua Amata, had said that she probably fears that this will likely go to the Supreme Court now, that they've obviously got an avenue to be able to appeal it to the Supreme Court. This was the first group who decided to argue for that American Samoans should be American citizens.
It's a fascinating case.
It is an amazing story, because we had the story up on our website. It was the most read story on our website because it's really, really divided the territory. You know, there's been arguments that, you know, American Samoans have lost a lot of soldiers, I think, you know, in terms of a lot of their people. So.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting stuff. Now, in Samoa, where are we at with this election? We're still very much in a holding pattern. Well, we've had the election, but in trying to get a government confirmed.
Election petitions are still going through the courts. And there seems to be a lot of little tween and throwing between, obviously, the FAST party and the HRPP party. So the caretaker government, what they're trying to do is push through what I've heard is the biggest budget in Samoan history. So the major concern at the moment, of course, is that for that to happen, Parliament need to meet.
To sit, of course.
Yes. So this is what Fia Miamata Afa is saying. She is saying, well, how can they do this? How can they try and push through this budget without Parliament sitting? So that's another
thing
as
well.
But here's
the thing. If Parliament sits, they'd no longer be the government. So how would they push the budget through? So it almost seems like they need to have a deal over that budget, don't they?
Yes. And
does it sound like that would resolve it? Or is the Prime Minister intent beyond that? The caretaker Prime Minister intent beyond that?
He hasn't come out and said very much about it, almost in a way that he's acting like it's business as usual. I just see all these little government releases coming through
Parliament's not sitting.
But Parliament is not sitting. And so all these things, the measures that they're trying to push through. One of the petitions too, which was earlier this week, went to the FAST party. That was between FAST party and HRPP member. So it was the FAST party that won that seat. So that was secure. So while this is where the election petitions are going on as well, there are still the little conversations. I saw too that apparently the government had said that Fia Mea Naomi Mataafa is renting a government house, which she'd had when she was with the HRPP party, but yet she was holding fast past meetings there. So there was a little bit of, you know, complaint about that going on too. So it just seems to be this little petty stuff going on while all the court stuff is going. But I think it really will come to head because they need to have this budget sorted. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what they have to do. And really, as you've said, you know, Parliament really needs to sit for this to be able to happen. So,
Whakawhiti, thank you as always. Moira Tuala Yepa Taylor is RNZ's Pacific team leader and our Pacific correspondent.